event this week, our Being Revolutionary Latinas in Leadership Summit on Wednesday, March 24th. And it is an East Coast, West Coast, across the nation event and celebration about leadership, about being revolutionary, about creating change in our lives and in the world around us. So we are so excited for this lineup. You can register on our short link. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/Latina Revolution with a capital L and a capital R. Bit.ly links are case sensitive. But I am so excited to share our lineup with you, our keynote for this event. It is Emiliana Guereca. She is the founder of Women's March LA. We have local leaders. We have nationwide change makers. We have global noise makers. And we have some performers and spoken word artists that are really going to give us a lot of food for thought. So very excited for this event. I hope that you guys are too. Again, it is Wednesday, March 24th. East Coast, it's 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, or 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific. Hope you're there. I look forward to it.
Welcome, welcome to this episode of Café con Leadership. I'm so excited to introduce today's guest, Mateo Gil, aka Matt Gil. I'm so happy to have you. We're connected on Instagram, but we've connected from Clubhouse primarily is where we got together. And I'm so happy to just hear so much of your story because I've read a lot. And I know that you're into personal development, and which is the core-ness of what we like to talk about on this show, is how do we develop ourselves and all of that, which we'll get into. So first, I would like you to just share a little bit about you and your backstory for our audience.
Yeah, I love it. And thank you so much, Sandra, for having me and for just creating this space to have these type of conversations. You know, that's, I think it's a conversation that doesn't happen enough, especially in our community and just globally in general. People try to run from feelings versus actually get to the core of how they're feeling so that they can change behaviors in their life. You know, I grew up with a beautiful family, and yet I still went to a very dark place in my life. I have had the honor and the blessing of impacting over 40 million people worldwide, standing on stages throughout the entire globe, telling people my story, touching people's lives, inspiring people through the journey that I've been on. And for a long time, I withheld that journey. I didn't talk about the feelings of I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I compared myself to so many other people, and not knowing what the journey that they went through to get to where they were. Like I felt like I didn't belong. I felt like I wasn't connecting and people truly didn't get me, which led me to making decisions that ultimately didn't support me and didn't lead me to where I wanna go. So I've been in this space for over 14 years of personal development. I got into this journey at a very dark place in my life. I had been using crystal meth and drinking for 6.5 years of my life. I did that as a way of not feeling the emotions that I was going through. I wanted to numb how I was feeling. And some people do drugs and drinking. Some people, they become workaholics. Some people go through and they're at the gym all of the time. Like, I think we all find ways of escaping how we're feeling in order to, because we don't want to deal with the emotions. We don't want to deal with what we're going through. And for me, it was a journey of trying to find myself again. You know, I believe that there's a saying that of a lack of confidence, or you have low self-esteem. And I don't believe in low self-esteem. I believe in blocked access to our self-esteem. And so my journey of what I went through was to get back to me.
I love that. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Like, where did you grow up and what's
So I grew up in the San Fernando Valley here in California. I'm California born and raised. My father was the assistant fire chief to the LA County Fire Department. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. I would go to the beach every weekend. So I'm kind of a really dark like the beach for me became my restoration, became kind of my spot to go and to forget things. You know, my dad would check me out of school and take me to the beach to teach me how to surf, and then tell me not to tell my mom that he took me out of school, and I would come back with all the sand on my body and in my shoes. And so I grew up in LA and still in the LA area in San Diego. And I love kind of just being in this space of warmth and just hospitality. I have a younger brother who we are 7 years apart, which is really kind of a long, we're best friends, but growing up we weren't that close because there was such a huge gap. And so I made a lot of imaginary friends along the way. A lot of people that, you know, that was my kind of how I tapped into kind of my creativeness. Growing up in San Fernando and in a very Latino community, I wasn't Latino enough. I speak very little Spanish. I understand Spanish, but I don't necessarily, I'm not fluent in it. I'm actually looking to move to Mexico to fly the Carmen for 3 months. So I'm working on my Spanish now so that I can feel like I fit in. But that was another part of my story, was I wasn't Mexican enough. I didn't speak Spanish. I was actually ashamed to, you know, to speak, because I knew I wasn't fluent enough. And I actually had a senior, I would say she's probably in her late 70s, early 80s. And she looked at me and she said, "You're a disgrace to all Mexicans," because I didn't speak Spanish. And from that point on, I completely shut down. Like, I stopped crying. I was like, I'm just gonna keep my mouth quiet. And so now as an adult, you know, I realize that the power of our stories, the power of, you know, just embracing that. I think there is a lot of us Latinos that aren't fluent and have walked around with that shame, have walked around with the, with that I should be doing more, but I that's just what, it wasn't the way that I was raised.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that, because I always tell people, you know, like I grew up in Jersey, but I was born in Puerto Rico. But if I've been to Puerto Rico, and like, I'm not Puerto Rican enough because my Spanish is not perfect, you know? Right. And sometimes I'm like, what'd you say? Can you say it like a little bit more like thing? And then in Jersey and in just American culture, I always felt not, like something was different about me, you know, especially right. In a room full of Americans and Anglos, you know, I was just like, do I fit in here? Do I fit in? I don't fit in here. I don't fit in there. So where am I? You know, I'm this byproduct of two worlds. And, you know, it's funny. I have an organization called United Latinas, and all our events are in English because that's where I feel most comfortable. Right. So I can totally relate to that. And that does cause a sense of like identity crisis issues kind of thing.
For sure. We walk around with that, with almost this shame, this unspoken shame of like, I should know. And the fact is listen, my parents didn't speak Spanish to me because they, you know, they wanted, you know, at the time they wanted us to be very Americanized, but to support us and, you know, and have every opportunity that was available out there. My grandparents, I was blessed to have my grandmother until she was 92. She just passed in November. My grandfather is 95 years old and still here. And I listened to the stories of him having three or four jobs of going out into the cannery and working in the cannery, and then going out and you know, doing different odd jobs to support his family. And then being able to eventually work his way into Lockheed and being very successful working for Lockheed. My grandmother, I remember her telling me stories of she did soldering. And so she would climb into the bellies of some of these planes, and she would be in these small little niches because she was such a tiny woman that she can get in there, and she would be soldering these wires for like the top secret Blackbird or the one of the jets that came along. And she had been working on it for years with Lockheed. And
like those stealth fighters.
Yes, mm-hmm. There you go. Yep. So she was, you know, she would tell me stories of those and what she used to do. And so I you know, for her, she had to fight her way, especially as a woman, as a Latino woman, and you know, she spoke Spanglish and a little bit, and that's where I learned my Spanish, was listening to my grandmother. And we would sit, I'd tell her, only speak Spanish to me so that I could absorb, you know, as much as I could. But my father, you know, growing up as a one of the very few Latinos in the LA County Fire Department and working his way up from the fire camps all the way up to assistant chief, you know, he was number three for LA County Fire Department. And that came with his own battles, you know, fighting, not necessarily racism, but just being Latino. And you know, he didn't have a college education. He didn't finish even college itself. He went to school for a little while, got his AA, but he worked his way up. He did it through hard work, through determination and caring about the firemen that he served. And so, you know, I want to honor their legacy, but not walk in shame.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple things, like, you know, your father took you out of school for some things that you were dealing with. Like, what were, not to get so deep into it, but if you want to, like, what were some of the things that you were dealing with, and how did you identify that, okay, I'm struggling with something and I need to kind of talk this out or figure something out with this?
So I think there's two different phases. One, as a kid, I really didn't know. Like, you're just trying to figure things out. You know, I work with a program called Motivating Teen Spirit, and we teach emotional literacy and emotional healthiness to youth around the world. And being a teen and a teenager is just odd and weird in itself. You know, you're trying to figure out who you are at the same time as you're trying to fit in. And then other people are trying to be so-and-so. And so there's this entire journey that we all go to try to just ultimately feel connected. So one, and then on top of that, I was gay. I am gay. And so there was always this, like, I didn't even understand what it meant to be gay. I didn't know what that was. And so I was trying to figure that out. And so I always felt like I said, like, I didn't belong. I didn't fit in. I wasn't the smartest one. So I wasn't, you know, the brightest light bulb in the box. My light bulb lit up, but it wasn't that bright. And then I wasn't playing sports. I would be the one that would be in the outfield and playing with roly-polies as a kid, you know, in the grass until the ball came out to where I was. And so I was interested in the creatives. I was interested in drama or writing. Like, I love writing. And so I just didn't know where my place was. And I didn't know how to talk to my parents. That was the other thing. So my dad would take me out of school just because he wanted me to surf. You know, he loved surfing. He loved the beach. I loved it as well. And that was our time to kind of bond with each other. But even that, you know, I love surfing, but I haven't done it in a while because I wasn't that great in it. Like, I'd rather just be at the beach watching people. And as an adult, I still felt like I didn't fit in. You know, now I know that I'm gay. I'm still trying to learn how to love and accept myself. I'm trying to please other people. I developed a habit of putting other people before myself. I created a habit of putting their dreams, their goals in front of my own, because then I felt validated. If I did for people, they would like me. If I made them happy, they would be happy with me. And so all of a sudden, here we are years down the road, and I'm like, I haven't achieved my goals. I'm not happy where I'm at in my life. I don't have the relationships that I want. And I haven't found true love. And that's what led to the dark place. That's what led to, you know, let me just explore this. And then drugs, you know, you get into an altered state of mind, and all of a sudden you think the world opens up to you. But really what was truly happening was I was losing myself. I was losing my heart. I was losing my spirit. I was losing my integrity and pushing away the people that loved me the most. And so that's when I had to begin the journey of, one, just embracing myself. I always say that some of our greatest gifts come wrapped in sandpaper. And my gift was the journey back to me. And that journey back to me is what led me into personal leadership, into showing other Latinos, other youth, other individuals who are walking in that shame, that you are not your past. I share my past freely because I know who I am today. And so that's what these conversations like this.
I love that. And you know what I want to add to what you have said before, like of not feeling like good enough, you know, like there's that saying, everyone's a genius. If you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, he will live his whole life believing he is stupid. And like everybody has their own genius zone. You know, we kind of like look to, I guess what mainstream tells us is intelligence, and we try to live up to, you know, academic. If we're not good at that, something's wrong with us. We're not as smart as these other people. If problems aren't as easy for us to, you know, math problems or some type of, you know, things, we feel inadequate at times. And I think exactly what you said is there are millions of billions of people walking around feeling that sense of inadequacy, that sense of where is my zone of genius and how do I, you know, find who I am. You know, self-discovery, I think, is a long journey. You know, I was speaking to a woman. She was about 75 years old about 2 months back, and she's like, Sandra, how do I feel like I could tell people, you know, this stuff, you know, when I feel I haven't made it myself still in that at 75 years old? You know, do we ever, like, I haven't made it yet, you know? And I said, you know what, I think that's the struggle for everybody. We judge ourselves to that point, and we feel all of those things. But everyone's a genius.
Exactly. And you know, and to that point, you know, the I haven't made it yet. We look as if it's you know, there's that old saying, life is a journey, not a destination. Like that yet is something that is a marker that truly doesn't exist. Because if you think back at your life, you're like, man, if I can just get there, then I'll be okay. And then we get there and then we're like, oh no, wait a minute. And now I need to get here. I need to get there. And so that final marker just continues to go further and further. And what we forget to do is we forget to look at the celebrations. We forget, and I say the word celebrations, and for some people that word is too big. It's acknowledgement of the journey. It's taking a moment and saying, wow, you know what? I'm not at the same place I was 10 years ago in my life, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, I now know that I'm solid in my belief and my love of myself. Is there opportunity to grow? Do I manage this negative chatter every single day? Heck yeah. But I know that it's not going to take me down. I know that somebody's look of disapproval is not going to shut me down the way it used to. Like, I've, you know, other people's opinions of me is none of my business. My job is to just keep pushing forward, is to continue to grow. And so that yet, I haven't made it yet. We look at other individuals, like even look at some of the top leaders. You know, how we've met was in the conversation around personal development leaders and, you know, finding out how do we as Latinos in the Latino community, you know, stand up and be, you know, share our stories in the personal development space. Your story, Sandra, is so important. Even if you're not at the yet that you have in your mind, somebody needs to see themselves in you and find the hope in you. That's why our stories are so powerful. That's why it's our responsibility to share our journeys.
Yeah.
Responsibility is to share the learnings. And listen, we may not be some of the top people that are out there in the world, but there's going to be people that are never going to connect with that top person. They're going to connect with the Sandras. They're going to connect with the Matts. They're going to connect with the Roberts out there. They're going to connect with the Marias out there. They're going to connect with the Sophie, like all of the different people, you know, that they feel, wow, that's my story.
Yeah.
That's my journey.
I love that. So how do you feel we can, because it's taken a long time for me to, like, share my story, you know, and because I think this, that especially in today, there's a lot of what is called trauma dumping, or like, you don't want to really dump on somebody what you're feeling. And sometimes, you know, there's also that saying that, that I really don't like, that says unless you can share something without being emotional about it, without crying, then you've healed. And I think that's BS, you know, because, like my struggle with my life, like, you know, if I even type the word mother, I get emotional and I'm tearing. It affects me on a very different level. And it's been hard for me to, you know, I have undergone, you know, depression and anxiety. And there were moments in my life where, you know, I think we do so much self-judgment that we do lead ourselves down that path where we want to numb ourselves. You know, how do you think we can like learn to be okay with that? You know, I've gotten to the point now where I'm more okay with it, and I'm okay with crying while I'm sharing a story, but without making someone else feel uncomfortable is, I guess, my own judgment. Like, did I make anybody feel uncomfortable? You know, kind of thing.
Right.
But how do you feel we can learn to share our story with an intention for an outcome kind of thing, you know?
So I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the word intention. Like, why are you telling that story? Are you telling that story because you're still trying to manage that story and the emotion? Listen, your story is still your story. Your story is, you're always going to feel. You're always going to you know, when I talk about my grandmother, my throat kind of chokes up because my grandmother was my, there it goes again. My grandmother was my earth angel. And I'm always going to feel that, but I don't get stuck there. So it's learning how to stand on your story and not in your story. How to go through and say, why am I sharing the story? Why am I, like, knowing that there's a direction? Now, here's the thing. I tell clients that I work with, and when we create content, and we have to go back into their stories, they're like, why would you went through that? I don't want to talk about that anymore. And I say, well, what was the lesson that you learned in that story? Like, let that experience that you went through, like, what did you learn from that? What did you take from it? You know, is it that I'm stronger than I thought? Is it that I need to build better boundaries around myself? Is it that I need to work on this emotion a little bit more? Like, is there a new awareness? If you're sharing, the more that you share your story, I don't want to say you take away the power of it, but you take away the emotional impact that it has on you. You're still going to feel it. But you're going to know that there's a reason why I'm sharing this story, because it's going to help somebody else.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think that the more I tell people, listen, the first couple times that you tell a story, that's for your healing. And then all of a sudden, once you've told that story maybe four or five times in different environments, all of a sudden, then it switches. It becomes to empowering and healing other people. And so any opportunity that you have to share your story, whether it be in a personal conversation, whether it be in podcasts, whether it be in your social media platform or of the people that choose to follow you. I did a Facebook Live yesterday, ironically, it was actually about telling your story. And I was in this marketplace, and I was telling people, listen, if you're willing to tell your story, I want you to type in the word I'm in. And I saw this list of people who were like, I'm in, I'm in, I'm in. And I said, and then do a post and tag me in it. And one of the ladies who had posted was sharing about her time walking through a cemetery. And as she walked through the cemetery, she realized that her life was changing. The old part of her was dying, and there was this new birth of this new life. And just to see the response of people who were like, wow, that was deep. I needed this message. Like, she began to feel the love, and she sent me a text message afterwards, and she said, Matt, she says, I never get this response on my social media. And I said, it's because you shared you. You shared your truth. And she goes, that was the most difficult thing I've done in a long time. And I said, that's amazing. Now do it again.
Yeah.
Like, continue to do it. Continue to expand.
Yeah.
So the more that you tell your story, the more I don't want to say easier it becomes, but there's less of the getting stuck there.
Yeah.
Because you've healed.
Yeah. I love that. I was in a room yesterday on Clubhouse, and, you know, it was Forbes starting. She asked me about my story, and I started sharing a little bit, she pulled it out of me, you know, so I started sharing more of it. And then I got this beautiful message on Instagram, like, you know what, while you were telling your story, I felt I was healing through that process. And we often forget that, like, we become selfish is not the word, because we're going through it so much that it hurts, that we feel like I can't tell this story without so much mustering up all of this pain that I've been feeling. But at the same time, how freeing it is when we think about it in terms of someone else is struggling, you know, and someone else needs to hear that we're in this together. We're all going through crap. We've all experienced trauma. I think we're all walking around with PTSD, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I think like this is bigger than us, you know, and the more that we connect and share our stories, like you validate my pain. Like you make me feel like it's okay. It's not just me. This is not, you know, this is not the whole world coming down on me. This is not just my life. This is all of us. And that's how we support each other and be there for one another.
Now let me step on a couple toes right now. This is going to be a moment where people are probably going to be like, I don't like this guy. I don't know who this guy is, but I'm not going to like him right now. But let me just say, how dare you go through a moment? How dare you go through an experience and find a healing and not share it with others? How dare you go through and find a way to manage the pain and the hurt, because now you're on the other side of it. You're five steps ahead and you don't turn around to bring other people with you and say, you know what, come here, I've got this. It may not have been the easiest way, but I found a way. Let me help you out. That was the biggest thing. Is I had a conversation with one young man one time, and he said, I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting to hear your story. It wasn't my story as in Matt Gill's story, but it was the story, the journey that I went through. He was waiting to hear that there was hope on the other side. And by me sharing his story, he said, wait a minute, I can do this. And so we get stuck in not telling our story because we're afraid of judgment. We're afraid of going through the hurt again. We're afraid of losing people. We're afraid of people thinking that we're crazy. We have all of these thoughts. That is ego. Some of us are walking around more committed to our ego than we are to creating impact in the world. We are more committed to being stuck in the story than we are to creating healing for other people. So if you have a story, if you have a tool, if you have a way of healing and you're not sharing that, shame on you. That's being selfish.
Wow. That's so true.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I mean, I'm going to keep sharing my story now. Like you.
Amen. Amen. Listen, yeah. And this podcast here, like, you know, even in the Latino community, we don't talk, like, we were raised, what happens in the home stays in the home.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the things. We don't even talk about our feelings. You know, my father just now he's 67 years old, 67 or 68, and he is now starting to tap more into his feelings than he did when he was, you know, in his youth. Because as men, we're not given the space to talk about our emotions. The only emotion that we can publicly show is anger. And even when we're happy, sometimes it's like, what's wrong with you? I'm just happy.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact is there's so many emotions that all of us go through, and we're told from a very small age to not show our emotions. Stop crying. No, let those feelings out. What happens is like, it's almost like a soda bottle. And if you had the soda bottle and you were shaking it up with the top on, all of a sudden there's pressure that builds inside. And those emotions shake up our lives. And there's pressure that's being in there. And what happens is that bottle, our vessel, us as humans, get so shooken up and there's so much pressure inside that sometimes we explode. We explode on other people. Some of the violence that's happening in the world is because of the pressure that they're under. For some people, they don't explode, they implode. I was an imploder. I didn't want people to feel my mess. I didn't want people to see what was going on with me. I didn't want to make them feel anything. So I imploded on myself by numbing, by drugs, by drinking. And then all of a sudden, here I am 6.5 years down the road, and I'm still in hurt. I'm still in pain. So when we tell, even going back to telling our story, when you tell your story, what you're doing is you're unscrewing the top of that bottle, and you're letting out some of that pressure. You're releasing some of it so that you don't explode or you don't implode.
I love that so much. So I know you've worked with Lisa Nichols. You did some work with her. Tell us about that and what you learned through that process or that journey. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the cool thing is, you know, Lisa actually came into my life at the very end of my journey through crystal meth. I was living in Hollywood. I had lost my job. I had lost my apartment. I was sleeping on my friend's couch. I was 125 pounds. My face was all sucked in. I thought I looked sexy. I thought I looked like the Ricky Martin, but I was I didn't look good and I didn't look healthy. And I was completely lost. I was walking past a mirror at his house one day and I saw my reflection. And there was a voice that said, "This is not who you are." And it was we hear our voices in our head all the time that talk to us, but this was a different voice. This was like one of those voices that just shook me to my core. And as I looked at myself, I began to just sob and almost wail. I fell to my knees and I was crying and I was like, you know, "God, if you're still there," and I'm not here to impose my belief, but I said, "God, if you're still there and if you're real, I need answers." And later that afternoon, I turned on the television and I saw this woman, this African-American woman with this afro who was doing this exercises with this woman. And as I looked at her, I just felt so connected to her. And I was like, man, I need to meet this lady. I need to work with this lady. Now, mind you, she's on television. You know, how are you ever going to meet somebody that's on TV? She's on this TV show. It was called The Starting Over House. And I was like, you know, I need to meet this lady someday. So 6 months go by. A friend of mine gives me the video of The Secret. And I'm watching The Secret. And lo and behold, there's that lady again. I'm like, oh, my God, there she is. And I didn't really remember her name at that time. I just remembered her hair and her personality and just the way that she made me feel. That was the thing. When she talked her story and she told her story, I felt something. It was like almost her spirit was speaking to my spirit. And I just watched and I was like, man, I need to meet this lady. So another year goes by a little bit over a year. And I get an invite to a taping of the Lisa Nichols show. And it was a pilot for her talk show. And I called my friend who worked at the studio who sent me the email. I said, "Hey, do you want to come out and, you know, watch the show?" I called him up. I'm like, "I need 4 tickets. I'm coming down." So I'm coming from Tehachapi, California, which is where my parents lived at the time, and drove from Tehachapi down to Burbank and got into Burbank. And I was so excited to meet her. And we were told that there were no more seats available because we were late. Then all of a sudden they were like, we actually had 4 seats, 4 VIP didn't show up. So we sat in the VIP section right behind her family. And I was like, oh my God, there she is. Here's this woman that's just like, she really helped begin my own healing in my life. You know, I'd been clean for about a little over a year at that time. And I was just like, oh my God, I got to meet this lady, and this excitement. And I was an emotional wreck because, you know, here she is. She's like within feet from me. The show finishes off and I go up to meet her as she's talking with her family, and the security guard stops me. And he said, "I'm sorry, this is for VIP only." And I said, I just need to thank her real quick. Just 2 minutes. He's like, "No, you gotta go." And I was like, dang it. So I had my friend, I asked my friend, I said, "Distract the security guard, ask him where the bathroom's at." And so she asked him where the bathroom is. As soon as he turned around, I ran around the back of the seating area. I climbed up the scaffolding. And I jumped over the wall and I came back down and landed in front of her. And I said, "Hi, Lisa, my name is Matt. I know you don't know who I am. You probably think I'm some crazy guy." I said, "But you keep showing up in my life and I just want to say thank you." I said, "I saw the video of you and motivating the team spirit. And I just feel like I need to be a part of it." She didn't say anything. She just kind of looked at me and I thought, oh God, I'm in trouble. And all of a sudden tears began to come down her eyes and down her cheek. And she said, "You know, I've been praying that God would send me generals." She said, I've been praying that God would send me men, because a man can speak to a young man differently than if a woman speaks to a young man." And she said, she invited me to begin to train with her, to touch the lives of youth worldwide, to teach how to manage that negative self-talk, how to take accountability for choices that they're making, learning what it means to make integrity-based decisions. Let me just tell you, it was one of the greatest gifts that I got, not only to learn from her, but to do more healing on myself, to learn how to manage my own emotions. And so for the first, I want to say a little over 9 years, 7 years, that's all I did was work with her and the teens, and doing Motivating the Teen Spirit. And then I came on board full-time as a full-time employee with Motivating the Masses, which is her bigger company, a global company. And was the creative director for the company. So creating content, creating programs, stepping on stages, speaking alongside her, sharing my story, sharing my journey, and really inspiring others. And so I'm very grateful for that moment, because had it not been for her and the healing, I wouldn't be able to do this, what I'm doing today. So for 13 years, I got to stand alongside her until I was ready to spread my wings and create my own space.
I love that. That is so powerful. And what a great risk, you know, that you took in doing that. Most people would have been scared, but you know what? It was destiny, right? It was something inside of you said, I got to do this, as crazy it may be. And that was destiny. Oh my gosh. That's so powerful. What do you feel like that you learned the most from that entire experience?
I would say it was connection. It was the importance of, people are drawn to Lisa because she shares her story. People are connected to her because of her authenticity. People are connected to her because of her realness. And I think that was the beginning of me being able to say, I'm worthy enough. And to be able to see that no matter where we went in the world, everybody understands love. Everybody wants to be seen. Everybody wants to be acknowledged. I will say that she made me very mindful of looking for the person that's hiding. When I'm in a room, when I'm speaking on a stage, although I love and feed off of the energy of the people that are in the first three rows, who are there, that have the excitement, my heart and my spirit looks for the person that's way in the back, that's in that very last seat over there, that's trying to hide, that says, I'm here, but I'm not, I don't know if I'm ready to be seen yet. As a matter of fact, when I go, I will usually have my facilitator or assistant or somebody who's with me that, and I tell them, I want to go to the back. I want to walk and I want to see the people who haven't felt like they've been seen before. And I watch sometimes as I walk through different events, or, back in the days when we had events often before COVID, I would look for the person who, obviously there's people who come up to you and want to greet you and want to meet you and talk to you. But I always look for the person who's still in that back, that says, that they're there, and I just want them to know that they're seen, that they're acknowledged. And I think that's actually one of the, if I was to sum up, everything, because I learned a lot, but one of the techniques that I always saw that Lisa was very mindful of that I want to mirror is seeing the people that aren't being seen enough. Because they're not they may not be in the space of saying, I'm here, I wanna, but yet they're at the event. Mm-hmm. Same thing on Zoom. We're in Zoom meetings now, Zoom virtual events where people don't turn on their cameras.
Yep.
I want to acknowledge you. Barbara, I see you're not cameras on, but I want you to know I see you, even that you're here in this room. James, I saw you type something inside of the chat. Being mindful of, they're not just boxes on a screen. They're not just a body in the room. They're a spirit. There's somebody that has a heart. There's somebody who's moving through some pain. There's somebody that's moving through a story. And if me just taking 30 seconds or a minute or 5 minutes to acknowledge that person can make an impact in their lives, then boom. Because it was somebody who did that for me.
Wow, what a great like reminder, like to be more mindful of that. You know, I think we don't really put too much attention, you know, on that. But I mean, like, I think you've made me more mindful in just sharing that, because now I'm going to be really intentional about making sure that I make everyone feel like they're part of. So I've seen like, not to steer too far off, but I've seen that you're wearing sweatshirts that say, do the damn thing.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So do the damn thing. I love it. So do the damn thing is, number one, it's my daily reminder. You know, I walk around with, I have my do the damn thing wristband. I've got do the damn thing in my wallet. I've got the shirts on. It is a company that helps people learn how to tell their story, learn how to monetize their story, learn how to build the business around it. But first and foremost, it's own your story. And that was where I was at. Listen, I, you know, like I said, I've been able to travel and be on stages, but I never truly owned 100% of my story. People who knew me knew that I was gay, but I never publicly came out and said that I was gay. It wasn't until March 1st, 2020 at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time that I went on Facebook, and it was my coach, Tiffany Largie, who's the owner of Do the Damn Thing. And we did a VIP day, and she was like, you know, we're talking, and somehow that topic came up, and I was like, yeah, I've never publicly shared that. And she said, what? How have you never said that publicly? And I was like, well, I was afraid of judgment. I was, some of my family, I never talked about it to them. And so I was afraid, you know, how is my family going to, you know, take it? Was I going to lose some friends? Were people not going to, were they going to unfollow me on social media? Were they not going to listen to my story anymore? Or like all of this, just what if, what if, what if? And the first thing she said, listen, she said, if we're going to work together, you need to own 100% of your story. And so she said, you need to go and you need to tell, and you need to do it on video, and you need to make it public. And I was like, okay. So she said, when are you going to do it? That was the thing. She gave me a by when date. She said, when are you going to do it? I was like, March 1st. Like, I gave myself 2 weeks. I was like, I need to work into this. Right. So I said, March 1st. And she said, great. What time? I was like, I don't know, sometime during the day. No, she said, no, give me a specific time. And I was like, 3 p.m. because I figured I have all day long to work my way up to get the guts. And so March 1st, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I got my phone. I went onto Facebook and I said, I have an announcement. And I pressed go live. And I had about 800 people who joined on that Facebook. And it just like, normally, my numbers aren't normally like that. And I was like, really, God, you're going to have all these people come right now to hear this? Like the time that I'm stepping out, like, I wanted like 2 people. So that way I didn't have to see, but all of a sudden I began to see the love come in. I began to see the support. And what I didn't, you know, some people were like, Matt, we knew. And I was like, and for me, it wasn't coming out, but it was it was freeing myself from the story and allowing myself to just soar. And I know that so many of us walk around with secrets that we hold on to. And March 1st was the day that I gifted myself freedom. And so now with Do the Damn Thing, I'm one of the coaches within the company who help other people to share their story, to craft their story, to learn how do I use a story. But Do the Damn Thing is so much more than just that. It's a message. It's a reminder. Listen, you're either doing the damn thing or you're not. Bottom line. And so if you're not, great. The days that I'm not doing it, I know it's my fault because I'm not doing it. But I wear the shirt or I wear the bracelet or I have the stickers because when I see it, it's a reminder. Are you doing it? And it's very disruptive. I love actually walking through airports with people see the shirt and they're like, yeah, I like your shirt. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, are you doing it in your life? They're like, yes. Or some people are like, I needed to see that message.
Yeah.
I needed to see it. And so Do the Damn Thing is so much more. And that we have what's called Do the Damn Thing Nation. And Do the Damn Thing Nation is all of our community of people who are just doing it in their life. People that are just getting started, in learning how to embrace your story, people that are just starting to build businesses, people that are just starting to get healthier relationships, all the way those that are making anywhere from $500,000 to multi-million dollars. So I love our community and I love what we do because it's all about doing the damn thing, whatever that is for you.
I love that. I love that. That's how I felt. I saw that those words and I'm like, yeah, you know, like it is a great reminder, you know, to do the damn thing, man. Exactly. Do the thing you've been thinking of doing that you're not doing because of fear, because of, you know, because of that, what you said perfectly before you went live, you know, like not wanting to be seen like that to broad masses. People are going to unfollow you. People are going to do this, but in general, in life, if it's a business, if it is sharing your story, if it's pursue, go do the damn thing. Stop talking about it and be about it.
Yes. That message. And get it done. And here's the thing. Like I said, I'm not here to impose my belief, but I believe that if God gave you an idea, he's going to give you the resources. He's going to give you the way to make it happen. You know, he's not going to save you from drowning in the ocean to put you on the beach and let you and then kick you around.
No.
You know, he's going to take care of you. You have to do the work. Doesn't mean that you're just going to be taken onto the beach and all of a sudden the cocktails are going to show up.
Yeah.
Like you have to do the work. And that's where the do the damn thing comes in, because it's a matter of like, okay, great. You know, we don't have a lack of resources. We have a lack of being resourceful. And so everything that we need is around us. It's a matter of going out and trying to find it and then asking for it. And we, especially in the Latino community, don't know how to ask.
So
we will sit in suffrage for so long and never ask for the support. Never ask for the people that are around us to help us out. I'm still learning that.
Yeah, that is a process, you know, especially like you said, it the community kind of like keep those things private, you know, and because of that, it hindered the community and people at large, you know, POC people as a whole, you know, there's a lot of that weight and that baggage that we're holding on to and we're afraid to share. We're afraid that we're going to be criticized. We're afraid to pursue things, or we think things are going to be delivered. The answer is just going to come. You know, I see people like, oh, I'll just pray for it. I'm like, okay, but what are you doing too? You know, like what you can pray, but you have to take action. You know, things aren't going to be delivered to us. The answers are, it's up to us, I feel, to structure how we're going to thrive and figure out what we need to do to get ourselves, you know, like to heal ourselves, to help ourselves. That's that saying, God helps those who help themselves kind of thing. It's up to us to do that work. Even Chris, not Chris Brown, that comedian, he had a car on the side of the road and there's a meme and it says, you know, the moment that, you know, he's waving like this for somebody to come help him fix his car. He's stranded on the side of the road. Nobody would come pull over. Nobody pulled over to help him fix his car. But the moment he started working on his car himself is when other people came and said, hey, you need help, you know?
Exactly. Because people see that you're in action and then they, you know, people want to know that they want to be a part of something. And even help is being a part of something. You know, I always tell people when they're creating something, the more that you include other people into your process, the sooner, the quicker, the faster it's going to happen, because people want to be a part of it. So even the fixing of the car, they see that there's action. They want to be a part of that. They want to say, hey, you know, how can I get my hands dirty with you? How can, you know, what do you need? Versus just somebody who's just sitting on the side and doing nothing. You're like, you know, like they want to help. People want to be a part of.
I love that. Matt, it's been such a pleasure having you on. I think everything you've shared is so like definitely awoken something else in me, you know, like it's beautiful and inspiring. And I just feel completely blessed to have you and for you to share. Before I let you go, what do you envision for the world, or what is like your message to the world?
I love it. So for me, and where I'm at, what I know about Matt Gill is Matt Gill leads with love. He leads with love. And I believe that, you know, with all of where the world is at right now, you know, and the, especially in the space of what we've just been through globally, you know, this wasn't just a U.S. thing. This wasn't just a racial thing. This wasn't just a one, you know, a one person thing. This was something that we all experienced together. And our biggest thing right now needs to be connection. It needs to be allowing people to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel like they matter in life. And so for me, that's my goal. That's my mission, is to let people know that you are more than enough, that your life matters, that who you are, no matter where you've been, you matter. You're important. I want you to feel seen. I want you to feel heard. And I want you to know that even if we never have the opportunity to meet each other in person, I go to bed at night praying for the people that feel lonely. I go to bed at night praying for the people that feel like, man, my dreams are just so far. I go to bed at night praying for those that are taking more action in their life. God, give them strength. God, give them hope. Let them know, let them feel just an inch, a little, just a droplet of love that somebody out there is thinking of them.
I love that. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. How can people connect with you and follow you?
So I'm almost every platform. On Instagram, I'm at Mateo Gil, M-A-T-E-O-G-I-L. On Facebook, you can follow me on Facebook, Matt Gil, M-A-T-T-G-I-L. I have on LinkedIn and all of the Matt Gil, I've got a business page. Website is actually in the making right now because I'm completely doing everything. So I took that down. If you're interested in learning on how to create bigger impact on your social media posts as a free gift, you can go to stopthescrollchecklist.com, stopthescrollchecklist.com. And I give a formula, 5 things that you can do in your posts to get people to stop and to engage you more. And then ultimately, if you're looking for ways of telling your story and making it big and actually owning your story, check out Do the Damn Thing. Look, I love Do the Damn Thing and Do the Damn Thing Nation. So thank you so much. And thank you again for this conversation. It's been delicious.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That was great.